I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Yo-hee-yo!
Take a cowpoke!
Yo-ho-ho-yo!
Do the vertebrae!
Yo-hee-yo!
I need some suction!
Yo-ho-ho-yo!
In the garage!
Yo-hee-yo!
Bring the crash car!
It's Weird Medicine. I'm Dr. Steve, doctor to the stars, with my little pal, P.A. John. Hello, John.
Hello, Dr. Steve.
And welcome to the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of radio. And in the studio tonight, we have double vasectomy Todd. Hello, Todd.
How are you?
A southern man who doesn't need Neil Young around, or Neil Diamond for that matter. If you've never heard us before, this is a show for people who would normally hate listening to a medical show on the radio. We try to deal with medical problems honestly and with plain language and with no limitations regarding content. If you have a medical question and you might be embarrassed to take it to your regular medical provider, give us a shout at drsteve202@gmail.com, or better yet, visit the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net, or call our voicemail at 423-343-8884. That's 423-DIE-TUTI, and that is a toll call.
Yep.
For those that still have to, you know, don't have an unlimited plan.
Right.
I guess there still are a few out there. Please remember, we're not your healthcare providers, and check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, PA, nurse practitioner, acupuncturist, or whatever. And tonight we also have our studio audience. Hello.
Hello.
That's Rob from Elizabethton, and John has dubbed our in-studio audience the inpatients. I prefer to call them poor lost souls. So P.A. John and Jill, who used to be on our show, or I'm sorry, Jill used to be on our show, P.A. John still is, had a baby last week. And
yep. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice. Thanks. Going. John's taken a break from all the hard work since he's been breastfeeding that baby every 3 hours.
That's right.
How's it going?
I think everything that everybody said about say goodbye to sleep, absolutely 100% true. You get sleep here and there, but it's here and there, and it's not your usual. So
yeah.
We'll get used to it, get on a schedule, and in a few months, I think things will improve. But
yeah.
So far, he's good. Came out looking like a cone head from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
But, it was rough. I have to admit.
Try squeezing your head.
Yeah, well, I know. I was going to say.
Vaginal ball and see how your head looks.
Yeah, I have to admit, it was probably one of the most amazing things that I've ever been a part of. In a sense of just standing there and watching, and I'm going to get sappy as all get out. To watch my wife do what she did, my love for her, I mean, it was just
what a
millionfold. It was unbelievable. The biggest thing was I wanted to name the kid his middle name Magnus, and for 9 months she said
Magnus,
no. And after the
fighter.
Yeah, and after the kid came out, I said, name him Sarah as his middle name for all I care.
Yeah, you let Jill do it.
Yeah,
she did all the work.
It. Yeah, she did. Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, John talks a big game about, oh yeah, he's doing fine stuff. I went over there, and they were changing a diaper. There were two of them changing the diaper together, and John's going, that's not right, Jill. You're not doing that right.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
It's stressful.
Oh, it is.
There's no
100%
it.
It's stressful. I mean, I've you know done a lot of things in life. I'm 35, have my first kid, and it's probably the most important.
It's the highest stakes you've ever played for.
Oh, exactly.
That's
exactly.
What it is. 100%. It's the highest stakes that you've ever played for.
It's you know, it is what it is, and
yeah, good job, man.
Yeah, so it's I'll
give our best to Jill.
I will. She's doing well, actually. You know, almost 2 weeks out. And
Ignatius or whatever his name is. So
yeah, little buddy is what I call him. So.
Well, and you know, Tacy and I published on the web our one-page baby manual. I know you guys have been using that, and Lisa and Travis, I know from XM, have looked at it, and a couple other people have looked at it. It's on our website at drsteve.com. You may have to search back. I'll put a link to it. But the one-page baby manual is basically, and it's not all our original stuff, what we did was we went to a whole bunch of classes. And you guys didn't go to any classes, right?
Oh, man, it was amazing. We didn't go to a single class. I didn't read a single book. I didn't do anything. I thought, oh, well, if all these people that really don't, you know, that don't have a education, that are just out there having babies, if they can do it, I can do it. Sure. Now I'm going, dang, I wish I would have read a book or something, at least, you know. But the one-page baby manual is fantastic.
But I mean, people did it for millions of years before we had the internet and one-page baby manual. So what do you need to crack a book for?
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing is stuff, you know, like the umbilical cord rotting and falling off. What is it supposed to look like? Is that okay? You know, the baby, the diaper rash right away and really
the circumcision.
Bad. Yeah, the circumcision. I did well right away. I mean, it's pretty easy to circumcise something that's like the size of a grown man's arm. So
yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I'm sure that's right. Well, we got a bunch of – congratulations.
Thank you.
More on that as time goes on. We got a lot of email last show about the beeps that people heard during the show. And we talked – I sort of had hoped that people would have kind of figured it out because it was a little bit of a joke.
Right.
But we had JJ, who's not with us tonight. He was sick, and so double vasectomy. Todd is sitting in for him on third mic. And JJ wasn't really in trouble, but he was having some problems at work because his supervisor had heard about the show and didn't approve. And if you remember what JJ does for a living, it's a little bit of a problem. I mean, he's got a little bit of a politically sensitive career, and you have to be careful about what people over you think. So, and during the show, at least three times, I continued to say his name because he has a very distinctive name, and so we bleeped it out. That after I had made a big deal at the beginning of the show saying the only uncensored medical show on the radio. So that's what that was about. And it was just me being stupid and saying his name over and over again. Yeah. So
rather comical, if you think about
it. It's pretty funny. Our show has been pushed back to 7 p.m. If you all are listening to us, if you haven't heard us before, we used to be on 8 p.m. Those who are hearing this on Sunday afternoon, no big change. But it just shows where our stock is with the new company.
Maybe we'll keep maybe 5 and then 3 and then push to Friday and
there you go.
Monday through Friday.
Yeah. They're slowly moving us to
prime time. That's it.
They're slowly moving us to prime time.
That's right. That's right.
We also got a 10-second promo this time instead of our rotating batch of two or three 30-second promos. So, and you know, my son is heartbroken because he had a promo that he cut for it. And I didn't add the music to it or any of that stuff just because we weren't going to be able to run it on XM. But I promised him it would run, so I figured we would play it now. And there's one great line in there that he came up with that I think is worthy. So I'll play that right now.
Hi, this is William, son of Dr. Steve from Real Medicine. You know the show where my daddy answers questions about your horrid body parts. Yes, I'm a boy, even though Auntie Fez says I sound like a girl. I'm only 5, give me a break. Anyway, my daddy's show has been moved back because of some poophead named Jim Brewer. So listen to Weird Medicine this Saturday night at 7 p.m. before the Saturday Night Virus on XF202, Sirius 197.
He's somewhat excitable.
Yeah. That's enthusiasm. That's nice. I like that.
So, but anyway, it takes me back. He's 5 and is a brown belt in karate and also has been on the radio a couple of times. You know, he's accomplished more than I did when I was 15. And it made me think, you know, we've talked on the show a couple of times that I've been on radio previously, long, long time ago in college. And Opie always said, you know, college radio doesn't count. College radio doesn't count. The first time I met them on the air, you know, he said, have you ever done any radio before? I said, well, college radio, and I know it doesn't count. Well, boy, I remember what this show was a show that I did with another guy, and his name was Tony Weick, and he's still out there, TonyWeick.com. He's still doing voices. And my nickname in college was Waku, W-A-K-U, so it was the Weick and Waku show. And I remember it being absolutely just cutting edge, brilliantly funny. And I've even said to myself, you know, if I had just stayed in radio and continued to do this, maybe I'd be where O&A are, or, you know, where some of the other big guys are right now, if only. And then Tony sent me a tape of our first show on the air, and it took me a while to get to where I could dub it over to digitally. It was on cassette, and it was really poor quality. And you'll see, I mean, it's really poor quality. But you can – the depths of how just awfully, awfully, just not even funny, good, bad, but just bad it is.
What year was this?
1975.
Okay.
Okay. So it's just so unbelievably bad. It's not even and Opie and Anthony do this on their show. And believe me, I'm not doing this for the same reason, because they are masters of the art of radio. Yep. And when they go back and play their original shows, it's funny because they've come such a long way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I've come that far. You know, we're doing this, but I mean, XM is really nice to give us this, but I ain't no radio star.
So, in other words, you could play the one from 1975 and play this one back to back, and there's no difference?
There's
not a whole lot.
It's not that much worse, and this ain't that much better. But it's funny, you know, Opie's always talking about how high his voice was, and he thought that maybe the tape was running at a funny speed. Mine's same way, so I think your voice just deepens as you get older.
And after you smoke 30,000 cigarettes.
Well, that's true. I did do that, too.
That's what I was wondering when I heard it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I was smoking here, too, because, you know, I was in high school on the soccer team and smoked. You know, I'd sneak out and smoke before a game. I was a genius. So, anyway, so I just thought that since we talked about this, we'd play a little bit of my original thing. And then we'll actually answer some medical questions at some point. All right, here we go. This is the Wyken Waku show from 1975.
Hello,
that's me. Yeah. Now, first off, we had really bad phone.
Would you speak
system.
Up to the telephone,
yes,
please?
Yes,
I don't believe we can hear you.
That's you?
That's me.
Hello?
Wow.
Hello?
Hold
well,
on. Well, to Charles.
Charles
Lindbergh.
Charles
who? Lindbergh. How do you...
Could you repeat that, please?
You're on the air, WCAR.
Oh, that...
Charles Lindbergh.
Oh. Now, wasn't Charles Lindbergh American?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Charles what am Lindbergh I doing the Lindbergh. Accent for? You know,
oh,
that's
is this Charles
thing.
Lindbergh?
Oh, and then Tony goes, is this Charles Lindbergh? He's asking the girl that. I mean, this is just a... All right.
So would you speak up, please, man? Hold one moment, please, and I'll get him.
Oh, what a setup that is. Oh, let me go get him. That's an old radio trick, John.
Charles?
Charles?
Hey, Charles?
Didn't
hello,
he
this is Charles Lindbergh.
What have you been doing with
Amelia? I'm sorry, but Amelia and I, well, I don't care to talk about that at the time.
Oh, that, my friends, is what you call improvisation.
Is that what that's called?
Now,
yeah, oh, God.
And then somewhere in here, I think the accent switches to a French accent, which is even more stupid. And that's Tony doing.
Could you speak up, please?
Effects.
I can't hear you. Yes, well, no.
Anyway, I can't play any more of that. Anyway, so that's the Wyken Waku show. That's what I did in college. And you know what? That's why college radio doesn't count.
Well, I want to disagree with you about one thing. I think you have come farther than you think.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Anyway, hey, you know what, guys? Let's get to some medical questions. We can't take total credit for this, but we may have – this show may have saved Guy's life.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think – I know the first day that we broadcast, we taught everyone how to feel their nuts. And I know just statistically there were one or two
medically,
people –
Medically. Not – yeah, everybody knows how to feel their nuts.
Right, right.
Properly examine their nuts.
Right, how to examine their nuts. Thank you. Thank you. How to palpate their testes. And I know statistically there at least was one or two people out there that felt something that they had to go get checked out. And there's a small chance that some of those, you know, that one of those people had a tumor that they didn't otherwise know about because of our show, just statistically based on the incidence of testicular cancer in young men. This one was a little unexpected, and we got a phone call on our line at 423-343-8884. That's 423-DIE-TUTI, and this is Tim, and I'll let him tell his story.
Hey, Dr. Stephen, P.A. John, this is Tim in Fort Lauderdale. I'm just calling to let you know that after hearing you talk about colonoscopies on your show, and after getting your advice in a few emails between us, I finally went and had my colonoscopy. The doctor removed 3 polyps. All of them were large and pre-malignant. One, I think he called it a sessile serrated adenoma, was very large, and he had a hard time removing it, had to do it in several sections. So anyway, he wants me back in 3 months for another colonoscopy just to make sure he got it all. He said if I waited another few years, he could be telling me something a lot worse. Thanks a lot, Dr. Steve, for all your good advice, encouragement, and kind words. I really appreciate it. You're the best. Thanks, Dr. Steve and P.A. John.
Hey.
There you go.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're canceled tomorrow, which, by the way, is not impossible, that call makes the whole thing worth it.
It really does
for us. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about what he's talking about. Pre-malignant polyps are just that. They're pre-malignant, which means that they will or can, you know, transform into cancer down the road. The theory is it takes around 10 years from a polyp to go from the adenomatous phase to convert to cancer. And you can have them removed now, easily while you're asleep in the colonoscopy suite, or later when they whack your colon out and put a bag on your side. So, you know, prevention is key, and early detection is key. People with a first-degree relative, now first-degree relative would be a parent, a brother, sister, or a child, with colon cancer or adenomatous polyps diagnosed at age less of 60 years, or if you have 2 first-degree relatives diagnosed with cancer at any age, should get a screening colonoscopy starting at age 40. Now, there's an exception to that. If your father, for example, was diagnosed at age 45, then you would want to get your colonoscopy done 10 years before his was diagnosed. So you would have your first colonoscopy done at 35. And people of and do it the earliest, that, you know, whichever one comes first.
Sure.
And then again every 5 years. So these are the people that are at high risk for colon cancer. People with a first-degree relative of colon cancer that was diagnosed at greater than 60 years or 2 second-degree relatives should be screened as average-risk persons, in other words, every 10 years, but starting at age 40. Mm-hmm. Okay? Everyone else can basically have a colonoscopy done every 10 years starting at age 50. Now, there are other screening tests. You can stick your finger up someone's rear end, and which we've done on Opie and Anthony several times, and test for blood.
Mm-hmm.
That test is neither sensitive nor specific. In other words, if you've got a tumor, it can miss it because not all the tumors bleed.
And not all of them sit right there in the
rectum. Right. Well, and it's not specific because you can have blood and it not be tumor-related.
Right.
Matter of fact, the majority of people that have blood in their stool, it's coming from something else. It's not a tumor.
So they got a hemorrhoid or?
A hemorrhoid.
Anal fissure.
Gotcha.
Wasn't she the one that was messing with Joey
Buttafuoco?
I'm sorry. It just came to me.
Came to me, too.
Yeah, both of y'all. I thought that was some joke I was missing or something. Oh, my God.
Now I've lost where we were. That's
screening
why
test
ONA
for
are the pros. You can have diverticular bleed, as a matter of fact, you know, where you've got little pockets in there that will bleed. And there's a lot of things that can cause blood in the poop. And most of them are not tumors. But if you have it, that's an indication to go get a colonoscopy to make sure that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also screen with a flexible sigmoidoscopy. Now, the flexible sigmoidoscopy is a much shorter tube, and it only goes up to the first third of the colon. Now, a lot of tumors are in that part, but it'll miss anything that's beyond that, and it can give you a false sense of security as well.
Also, you can get a barium enema, but that is, and they're not only uncomfortable, but they can miss things. And you can mistake, if you didn't get a good prep, if you didn't take your Fleet's phosphosoda and get a good tsunami that shot all everything out of the colon into the pot, and you've got a turd in there, then it can look like a cancer, and you could end up having another procedure for another, you know, for no reason. So I am a fan of colonoscopy as a screening tool because the disease is so treatable right then and there if you catch it in the early phases. And you got the doctor's eye right on your colon. They look at every single inch of your colon. It doesn't meet the criteria for a good screening tool. We need to find a better tool. Mm-hmm. But for me, still, it's still the best.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1 in 26 women and 1 in 17 men will develop colorectal cancer during their lifetime. So, you know, it's a pretty common disease.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I'm very proud of Tim for, you know, stepping up to the plate and getting it done.
Right.
All right.
All right. Got a question from a listener. Hi, I'm a 25-year-old relatively healthy male truck driver, which is beginning to take its toll. I do, however, eat healthy and exercise regularly this past summer. This past summer, I got some...
I knew you were going to do this because you didn't read the question.
Decadurobolin. What the heck is that?
Well, I'm going to... That's part of the question.
All right. And Sustanon, off the street, I dosed...
Decadurabolin and Sustanon.
Sustanon, off the street. I dosed 1 cc of Deca per week for 8 weeks and felt like a teen again. How can I go about legally doing this again? Thank you, Mr. X.
All right. So
you a-hole.
Deca is the street name for a steroid, a male steroid called nandrolone. And Sustanon is a mix of long and short-acting testosterone. So what you do with Sustanon is it's got some testosterone that gets into your system right away and then some that stays in the tissue and then leaches out over the next month. And so that was what it was first designed for, is for people with low testosterone levels. And you give them a shot, and then it'll last a month. The stuff's available on the street, and a lot of it is made – I know that a lot of the Deca that's out on the street is made in India. And they're anabolic steroids is what he's talking about. And they're all siblings and cousins of the male hormone testosterone. Now, what do they do? Why do people use these? Well, they increase your weight and body mass. And they're obviously performance enhancing. I mean, these things have been in the news. There's all these asterisks being put on people's records in baseball and other sports because of steroids. I mean, they really do enhance your performance. You can't take some schlub and make them into a great athlete, but it takes great athletes and makes them even better. And so it sounds like I'm pushing it. I'm not in favor of steroids in the slightest, because there's a lot of downside to them.
Mm-hmm.
They can cause a shrinking of the testicles, because the testicles look around and they go, well, heck, there's plenty of testosterone around. What are we doing here? You know, and they just go to sleep, because that's where your testosterone is produced, is in your nuts. They can cause liver and cardiac damage, among other things, rage, loss of libido. You would... And increased risk of prostate cancer. And the thing is that the male body does use some female hormone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it uses as a substrate, in other words, the molecule that it uses to convert to female hormones are the male hormones.
Okay.
And so you can convert testosterone to estrogen. So, well, you do it at really low levels in the normal human body, because you're producing a certain amount of testosterone, maybe less than 1% gets converted.
Okay.
But when you've got a ton of extra male hormone around, all of a sudden now you can convert a lot more female hormone. And these guys will get gynecomastia, in other words, man boobs.
Yeah, heard of that.
And other problems that go along with taking female hormones. You know, you can lose your facial hair and all that stuff. Now, I looked at some of the websites that are promoting the use of steroids in bodybuilding, and they were recommending taking tamoxifen. Tamoxifen is a chemo. It's a drug that we use to prevent recurrence of breast cancer. It's an estrogen blocking compound, and so, or it's not a compound, but an estrogen blocking molecule. And it's used as an anti-female hormone in people who are using high doses of male hormones, and they're getting a lot of female hormone effects. So you're taking yet another drug that's big-time medication to counteract the effects of the thing that you're using. So you're mixing up all kinds of hormonal crap. I'm not a fan of this. I think it's a bad idea. I've seen bad things happen with people who have been, you know, habitually using steroids. Now, you had a question earlier about steroids, and I thought it was, or was that Rob? That was you. Yeah. Here, get on mic, and you had a question about steroids, and I thought it was a really good one to ask.
Yeah, I was just wondering if taking a prednisone step down pack, if I work out like a fiend when I'm taking it, will I bulk up any, and B, are my nuts going to shrink?
What's that? Yeah, are your nuts going to shrivel?
Yeah, my nuts going to shrivel up like a little raisin.
That's a great question. Those are steroid dose packs, but a cortisone dose pack is not an anabolic steroid. So they're not related to the male hormones. Those are stress hormones. They increase your blood sugar. They can make your face fat if you take them for a long time. They can give you diabetes, but they're not, bodybuilding steroids.
So they're not performance enhancing in
right,
any way.
Right. Well, they may be to some extent, but not in the same way. They're not male sex hormones.
Right.
You know, which testosterone is. So I think it's a great question. A lot of people, you know, you're going to give me steroid pack. You know, what do you want? You know, what are you trying to do? And then I end up having to have this conversation pretty frequently because people are a little freaked out about the whole idea of taking steroids.
I had a patient who said I needed to write down what I was giving him. I gave him just a steroid dose pack. He said, "You need to write that down in case they do a drug screen on me." And I said, "Steroids shouldn't come up in a drug screen." He said, "It does with the athletes." And I said, "That's a completely different." And he said, "I don't care. Still write it down."
Sure.
I said,
"Okay,
sure, whatever."
We, ghosted and co-wrote a book about professional archery with a guy, and one of the chapters in the book was talking about performance-enhancing drugs, and those guys, you wouldn't believe the stuff that you can't take if you're a professional athlete. And he said that what they would do is they give you a cup. You don't get to go in a room. You're standing there in front of a table, because he did international stuff.
Right.
He was never in the Olympics, but the next things for indoor archery. And they'd hand you a cup, and there's a girl sitting there, and she's got her clipboard, and it's like pee.
Wow.
And it's like, right here?
Yeah, I don't know if I could do that.
I know.
I could if they turn the cup upside down.
I don't even get that.
Yeah, the girl right standing there, you have to pee in the cup. If you turn the cup upside down, it's pointing the other direction. Get it?
Yeah.
Peeing with an erection.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Boy, that was way an obscure reference, dude.
What about the Southern Man?
I think more people have heard Sweet Alabama than your reference.
Down Home or Sweet Home Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Southern. Come on.
Rob, can I get some help?
He didn't know what it was either.
All right.
Jeez.
All right.
You guys. So you should be thrown out of the South.
Thrown out.
All right.
So you don't have any of the side effects such as rage and loss of libido on an anabolic steroid either?
You mean on a corticosteroid?
That's what I mean.
Right, yeah, on prednisone and dexamethasone and those kinds of things. You could get a feeling of well-being. Some people have trouble sleeping on them, but you're not getting the those negative effects. I mean, they don't affect the liver the same way.
Okay.
They don't affect the cardiac system like they do. Although there are people out there that have taken steroids every day, and I'm talking corticosteroids like prednisone. So people with emphysema or asthma sometimes will have to take steroids every day, and there are other diseases where they have to do it. And the things after years and years, they can get diabetes, cataracts, and thin bones.
Yeah,
they
can
get osteoporosis and weight gain and that kind of stuff. So anyway, so that's the difference. So if your doctor's going to give you a prednisone dose pack for a week, it's probably okay.
Yeah, and you're not going to end up in the major leagues, or you're
That's
not going to put on a bunch of muscle mass.
And you're not going to lose your nuts.
And you exactly. shouldn't lose your nut.
Now, one thing I wanted to say about this guy, we're pretty much being negative about what was going on with him, but there is something that if we're going to be complete, we need to be talking about, and it's not impossible he felt good because his testosterone is low. Uh-huh. You know, 25-year-old men can have low testosterone from premature testicular failure. Mm-hmm. And the testicles produce male hormone, and if they stop doing it, you'll get a bunch of symptoms. And it's called hypogonadism, and it is vastly underdiagnosed and underdosed, too. It is estimated that only 5% of men who have low testosterone levels are actually being treated for it. And they just think that being tired and having low libido and all those things are a natural part of life, and they don't have to be. People who have low testicular failure will have loss of libido, so a decreased sex drive. They'll have weakness, fatigue, and fat gain, where all of a sudden maybe they were in pretty good shape before and then they just get kind of blobby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's very easy to diagnose, but you got to complain to your doctor about it. And then you got to, if your doctor isn't thinking about it, they may miss it. So you need to say, do you think I need to get my testosterone checked?
Hmm.
And then they'll go, oh yeah, not a bad idea. And then they'll check it, and it may be low, and then you can treat it. It's very easily treatable, but it's diagnosed with a simple blood test. If it's low, then they would do a follow-up blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very easy to treat. You get a shot every 2 to 4 weeks, which is cheap, but it's a pain in the butt having to go to the doctor's office every couple of weeks. Some guys just learn how to give their own. And or you can use a daily gel or a patch, you know, and which is a lot more expensive. Now, the oral meds, the ones you take by mouth, by the way, they, for the most part, are bad. They have to go through the liver to be metabolized, and the liver doesn't like it, and it really causes problems with your liver over time.
Okay.
So the oral meds we don't like so much. But, you know, last week we talked about my 20-pound weight loss. Or last month, and I was really concerned about it because here's my thing is I don't weigh myself very often. So I got on the scales, and I was 165 pounds. Last time I weighed, I was 185 pounds, and I've had this kind of vague abdominal pain for a couple of years. What am I thinking? Well, I had a guy write to me, Turtle from RonFez.net, and he gave me some data that showed that people will lose 10 to 15% of their body weight when they start on testosterone. And I have this – the reason I can speak about this without looking at any notes is because this happened to me. I was fatigued. I was weak. My libido was kind of flying out the window, and I had my testosterone checked. It was low. They put me on testosterone, and, you know, I feel like $1 million. So,
cool.
Big difference, and I'm a lot leaner than I was, and it just happened so gradually, you know, that I just kind of didn't even notice it. So if you guys are out there and you feel like you're tired and you're fatigued and you've been putting on weight and you can't get rid of it, and you're not having sleep apnea, get your doctor to check a testosterone level. And let us know. Write to us or call us at 423-343-8884. That's 423-Jai-Tooty. And if you and go to your doctor and you have a low testosterone level, you know, let us know.
Yeah,
and
cool.
We had another save.
Well, when you were going through the symptoms, the first thing that hit me was just depression. I thought,
yep.
You know, if I had that happening to me, I would just think, well, I'm in a slump. I'm down.
Yep.
And
you might get put on an antidepressant too, because if you came to me and I wasn't thinking, hey, every young or middle-aged or even older guy that comes in complaining of fatigue, I need to check a testosterone level on, I would put you on an antidepressant.
Hmm. Wow.
So there you go. Well, let's move on. The last time we were together, we talked about this thing called the euphemism treadmill, and it was a really neat concept where we learned about previously neutral terms evolving to take on a negative connotation. For example, midget was once a medical term that meant anyone shorter than 4 feet 11. Well, now it's become a pejorative term that's offensive to short people and little people. And we brought up the terms moron and idiot that were once medical terms but have taken on such negative meanings they can't be used medically anymore. And, you know, until the 70s, the term moron, idiot, and imbecile were still used in the medical profession. And I didn't know that. So, And I thought, just looking back at the history of this might be kind of interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
So there were these guys, Alfred Binet and Theodore Simon, came up with this thing called the IQ test in 1911. It was they didn't call it IQ at that time. It just measured intelligence, and it based on whether children could accomplish tasks like, you know, pointing at their nose or counting pennies and stuff like that.
Wow.
And then any child with an IQ above 70 was considered normal. And those with scores above 130 were considered gifted. And then they wanted to classify these scores below 70, and so they came out with this classification of retardation. And so those with IQs between 51 and 70 were called morons. And they could learn stuff and could do some menial tasks and communicate and stuff like that. And then... imbeciles were people with IQs between 26 and 50 that never got past a mental age of 6. And then lowest of all were the idiots with an IQ between 0 and 25. And they were considered with poor motor skills. And, you know, and it's just hearing this now, it's – I mean, it's hard not to laugh about it because, you know, this is a 32-year-old idiot. I could imagine writing that in a chart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or worse yet, you know, originally diagnosed as an idiot, after further testing, come to find out he was actually a moron.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Well, one of the things was that I looked is that the psychologist back then used a trick. And if you asked a question and they answered, you're a moron at worst. And if they don't answer, he might be an idiot.
Wow. So they just clear the bottom third off the pad.
Yep. Hmm. So today the classification is a lot broader. These terms have been replaced with mild, moderate, and severe and profound retardation, and they use a lot of other factors other than IQ. IQ's just really been discredited other than as a very general starting point. So anyway. All right.
Yeah, interesting. Cool.
So now we've established that P.A. John is a moron.
I was thinking
more. I always thought he was an idiot.
Yeah. That's what I was
thinking. Good to clear that up.
Yeah.
And remember that these things got used in a pejorative sense, and that's why we can't use them in medicine anymore. Although, you know, those poor folks that would fall into those classifications, they just really don't need yet another label, put
right
on them.
That's true.
So I think just using a sort of more neutral classification like we have, but it's weird. You start wondering, all these neutral terms from the past are now offensive. I wonder if profound retardation somehow will become offensive in the future. So,
you know, me answering or responding to that question made me smarter than the moron.
Oh, that's
so
true.
There you go.
You're at least a moron.
At least.
Well, you know, even the word cripple, probably the same way.
Yeah, no, it's same thing.
At one
time
they had cripples' homes everywhere.
Yep, that was a medical term that now has become, because of this euphemism treadmill, which is something, as we find more examples of that, we'll bring it back up again, because I just find that fascinating. But anyway, all right, we've got a question.
Got a question. Dear Dr. Steve, I believe you have created the longest radio tease known to man. You have even surpassed Opie way back when, not exactly sure the date. You had teased on the Opie and Anthony show before your very first show, I believe, that being fat can actually save your life.
Yes.
I am a diehard listener of ONA and Weird Medicine, and you have never told us how. Unfortunately, I missed the last episode, anxiously awaiting for it and to be placed on the site. But please, sir, if you could, tell us what the hell you are talking about. You tease.
That's Tim. I went back and found the audio on this. And there's a little bit of a story behind this. But
explain further, though. Weird medicine. What do you mean?
Well, we're going to...
Like
rubbing
shit on your skin and stuff?
Rubbing shit on your skin?
What? I think the average... I've seen your fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah,
we've seen our fans.
So you're going to do a weight loss show. I think that health isn't always the number one priority.
True.
With some of your fans. So we're going to work on that a little bit. And yeah, we're going to do some... We may do some weight loss. I've actually got a segment on why being fat can save your life. So that
really
might be encouraging for some of your listeners.
Now wait, how does that get followed up? Like if you get hit by a bus.
Boring.
So anyway, so that was it. He's absolutely right. And it's just amazing the things that we say and then don't think about again.
Right.
That are still on Tim's mind. But what happened with that was when Opie first put out the call to do shows by listeners, he said, you know, if you listeners have any ideas, send them in. And so I did. And then the next thing I knew, after a little bit of back and forth, we had this show that we were going to do. And John had never been on the radio before, and I hadn't been on since, Wike and Wye. So you know I was really ready. And I was defecating in my pants thinking about this. We were going to go to New York and do a show in Opie and Anthony's studio. Who did I think I was trying to do something like this? So one of the responses that I had to that, or compensations I had, is that we just need to be really well prepared. So we had, and John will remember this, we had topic after topic after topic, and we had 25 topics that we were going to talk about.
In an hour and a half.
In an hour and a half. And I didn't think we had enough. I was worried that we were going to get up there and not have enough. And we had
prepared, but we had never done phone calls.
Right.
And so we didn't even consider the phone's ringing.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah, I was.
To be honest with you.
We never even thought of it. I mean, we kind of thought about, well, and we'll take some phone calls.
Yeah.
And we got up there and we got through two of our little topics. And Eric, I guess it was Eric or Danny.
Danny.
It was Danny. E-Rock was there, but Danny came up and said, you guys have got to start taking phone calls. And Pat Duffy was there too. And he said, the switchboard is absolutely slammed. Which is why we love doing the live show, because the switchboard is completely slammed the whole time.
The listeners are great.
They are. And it's amazing what people will reveal on the radio that they, to a national audience, that they would never tell their regular doctor. You know, and that's why we get all those great questions. It was really cool. And what a lot of people don't know is Anthony and Melinda were sitting there on the couch listening to us, that added a whole nother level of intimidation for me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And I remember, anyway.
Yeah, didn't show. You had a really good show.
Wow. Well, and Double Vasectomy Todd was one of the first calls to that show. I was so nervous, I didn't even know it was you when you called
in. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Because you were saying people reveal things on the radio they wouldn't reveal to their normal doctor. Well, luckily mine is both.
That's right.
Or at least was at the time. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, anyway, so yes.
Next question.
I'm going to do like Opie.
You're not going to do it, huh?
No, I'll do it.
He's on.
It's it really is not that big of a deal, to be honest with you. Thank you, John. I'll take your copy. Being fat can save your life. This was a study done by a Dr. Kumyar Kalantarzadeh, and he was a professor of medicine and pediatrics at UCLA. And what he did was he analyzed a bunch of data of observational studies and found that being fat is an advantage under certain circumstances with a certain population of patients. And one of those is dialysis patients. Another one, rheumatoid arthritis, cancer, emphysema or chronic obstructive lung disease, and adults over 80. Now, if you think about it, what's the thing that strings all of these problems together? Is
treatments cause weight loss, deterioration,
or they're wasting diseases,
right? Yep.
And so, if you have cancer and you weigh 80 pounds and you're going to lose 10% of your body weight, you don't have that much to lose. But if you weigh 400 pounds, you can lose 40 and really get by with it without incurring a big, problem with your treatment.
400 pounds, really?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, if you lose 10% of your body weight, you're losing 40 pounds. Yeah. Whereas if you're 80 pounds and you lose 8 pounds, that's a big deal.
Yeah, right.
Down to 72. So, wasting syndromes and malnutrition were more important markers for death risk than conventional risk factors in these groups, like smoking, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And for short-term survival, long-term risk factors like obesity and all the other things I said are really less relevant. So the take-home lesson is that life is always more complicated than we think. But being fat may protect you in some circumstances once you're already sick. That's the other thing, that all kinds of studies show that you'll be healthier in the first place if you're thin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, if you're big and big person, big fatso, don't take this as it's Woo-hoo. Okay to be fat, because right. it's not. It's just if you get a terminal illness, then you'll live longer than the skinny people that get it, but you'll be less likely to get those illnesses if you're thin in the first place, so you mm-hmm. still need to lose weight.
So I'm guessing that if what I'm reading into this is if you're a 32-year-old healthy male and you have a history of cancer in your family, you don't want to bulk up to 300 pounds
right.
in case you get cancer
no, that's
when you're
right.
60.
That's right. That's right. Gotcha. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Don't use this as an excuse yeah. to, you know, eat pie. So, all right. What else you got?
We've got another phone question.
By the way, you're listening to Weird Medicine on XM 202, Sirius 197. You can email us at drsteve202@gmail.com or go to the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net or call us at 423-343-8884. Now, that's a voicemail line, and it would be for the next show at earliest. So if you need an answer now, don't call us. If you need an answer now, go see your regular medical professional and write to us about it later. All right.
I'm having a diverticulitis attack.
And a perfect example. He's having an attack right now. Hopefully this question pertains to something long term, but anyway.
Started 4 days ago. I've had nothing to eat. I'm wondering just how long it does take for the body to get rid of all the food within it, because I'm still going to the restroom, even though I have. It's been 4 days. Also, I've been on the antibiotic Flagyl, and my last dose was 12 hours ago, and I hear that it works like Amadeus. Worried about drinking alcohol tonight of side effects. Wondering how true that is. Thanks.
All right. Very good. So he has diverticulitis. He's not really calling us about the diverticulitis, which I was a little concerned about. Let's get everybody on the same page. Diverticulitis is caused by infection of pockets in the intestine, in the large intestine. It's caused by high pressures of stool caused by our low-fiber American diet. And I think we've explained this a little bit before. The intestine has a real fibrous outer sheath and a real elastic inner sheath. Mm-hmm. And if you remember in the old days when we had tires that had inner tubes, if the outer hard rubber tire would split, the inner tube would bloop out and you'd get some kind of a ballooning effect. Well, it's the same thing that happens with diverticulitis or diverticulosis in the colon. And what happens is that you get these pockets, and then they get impacted with disgusting fecal matter, and then it just sits there, and then you get an infection. And the symptoms are pain and fever, sometimes bright red blood per rectum, the treatment is fiber, antibiotics, antispasmodics. That's to prevent. I'm sorry, the fiber is to prevent antibiotics and antispasmodics to treat the pain and the, and when we talk about antispasmodics, just something to relax the bowel so it's not cramping up. And there is a medication called metronidazole, which is an antibiotic, and it is works on gut organisms and is frequently used with people with diverticulitis. And it has effects similar to that stuff called Antabuse, mm-hmm. which we give to alcoholics. Now, what happens with that is it's a medication that stops ethyl alcohol, in other words, alcohol that we drink, the stuff that's in beer, wine, and liquor, from metabolizing all the way. So it gets stuck, and you get a buildup of this stuff called acetaldehyde, which is just a chemical, but it sounds bad, and it is. And it makes you gives you a headache, makes you dizzy, may give you nausea and vomiting, all those things. So when you take so alcoholics who are well motivated will take Antabuse to keep them from drinking, mm-hmm. and it works reasonably well.
Does it just kind of go straight to the hangover? I mean, is that how it feels?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, wow. Except it's really severe. If they drink while they're on it, they'll just get really, really sick. And, wow. Yeah, I guess it's like okay. an instant, really bad, worst ever hangover.
Wow.
And it's a real good it deters people from having another drink. Well, guess what? This one antibiotic called metronidazole or Flagyl also has that effect. It's to a much lesser extent. But if you're taking it and drinking alcohol, you're going to get – you're very likely to get sick from it. So that's mm-hmm. that's one. And it'll always – well, it will – the pharmacist will always put a thing on your on the bottle, don't drink alcohol with this medication, and that's why.
Gotcha.
All right.
Now, did he say he had eaten for 4 days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great question.
I thought, like, after 12 hours, you should be, or a day at least.
You will, poop is mostly bacteria. So you will continue to make turds even after you've stopped eating for a long time. It's amazing. Now, the food that you eat today should be out within 24 hours, and it just depends on the so-called transit time and how much fiber you eat. The more fiber you eat, the shorter time it takes for it to go from your gullet, from your craw, to out your ass, you know. And the less fiber you eat, the longer time it takes.
Okay.
But, you know, this whole business of, oh, I chewed gum so it'll be in there for 7 years is all a myth, unless it gets stuck in a diverticulum.
Right. I think we have time for about one more question.
All right. Actually. Well, let's go to GVAC's question then.
All right. Let's see. Read it.
Okay. I'll read it. Dear Dr. Steve, I just took a dump that had the consistency of peanut butter. Then I had an extended wipe-a-thon afterward. This can't be good, right? Signed, GVAC. So, you know, when you – he's right. It's not good for anyone. When you wipe with toilet paper – the inside of the anus actually pooches out, and you're actually rubbing the mucous membrane of the lower intestine with dry paper, and you're just abrading it. That's all you're really doing. And it's no wonder that people have itchy ass and hemorrhoids and rectal fissures, and that our crappy low-fiber American diet just gets us. That's where we get this from, mm-hmm. You know. The French may not use deodorant, but they also don't have proctological problems like this, and or at least not to the extent that we do in the United States. And for the reason is they don't use toilet paper. They use bidets.
Yeah.
And ask Bob Kelly. Bob Kelly's talked about it on the show. You know, the bidet rules. You basically sit over it, and it washes your awful anus with water, and then you pat yourself dry, and you're on your way. And there's, you know, you're not doing the scritch, 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 scritch that you're doing with dry paper. You know, of course, they also stand and crap over a hole on the floor, yeah. So they're not perfect that way either. But, you know, if you have a hairy ass crack, using just dry paper, what's that going to do? It's like taking Vaseline and trying to scrape it off a bare rug, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it just never you can't just all. Do it with paper. You got to get in there and wash it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people with fat ass cracks, you know, if they're sitting, their ass crack is just going to smash together all the time. And you know, they are not going to be able to get the sweat and the little bit of stool that's left behind out of there, and it's not going to dry out, and so they're going to have itchy butt too. So one solution to that is to just take a piece of gauze or even toilet paper, put a little shea butter cream or something like that on it, just very light amount, and then just shove it up in your crack and what that does is it keeps the two sides of the butt from smashing together.
Right.
And you can, if you're a truck driver, you can ride around like that, and no, and it works, and it wicks away the moisture. So.
Excuse me, boys. Got to go change out that toilet paper and shea butter.
Yeah, that's really something. But you know, if it keeps you from getting. It keeps hemorrhoids and all kinds of nasty
itchy ass crap.
Then yeah.
And if you can't get the fiber content in your diet up, then use Citracell. We talked about it before.
I knew you were going to Citracell.
I'm always going to Citracell. It is the most perfect thing out there.
Yeah, well, it worked for me.
It is methyl cellulose. It is the stuff that they made slime out of in Ghostbusters 2. It's very inexpensive, and it tastes good. There's no gritty aftertaste, but don't let it sit because it turns into gel. So, yeah, gosh, you guys got anything else? Looks like we're out of time. I hear the music. So this hour has vanished like a cruller down a competitive eater's gaping craw, and 24 hours after you listen to it, it will smell about the same, too. We want to eternally thank Sherwin Sleeves for his support. He has some really exciting stuff coming down the pike, so check him out at atomsmotion.com. And thanks to Murray Reams for being the best friend a man could have, and to my niece Holly, who just bought a Sirius radio for the best of XM so she could hear the show.
Excellent.
Hey.
Thanks to JJ. JJ, who wasn't here, the man who cannot be named except by calling him JJ, and thanks to Double Vasectomy Todd for being here, and for Rob from Elizabeth, and thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having us.
And special thanks to P.A. John and Little Ignatius, the new addition to their family. For P.A. John, J. Vasectomy Todd, and me, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, and get off your asses and get some exercise, and we'll see you in another month for the next edition of Weird Medicine. The child is grown, the dream is gone. And I have become comfortably numb.